coming. He shouldn't have allowed this to happen, but dropping out of the plane suddenly would be too suspicious, and not answering would be just as obvious. If you really gave up all the Ackerel, Basin and Lyda would have been safe to remain here as long as they wanted. Are they safe, Dessel? Should they turn around so they can take a portal to you? No. Yes, Lyda, tell your father to head back to Fatal. The Kreps will allow him to take a portal here after Rela speaks to them.
He's not going to do that, Lyda said. I've already tried to convince him. Vidos doesn't want to turn around either.
Lyda had mentioned Rela's half-brother enough times for Dessel to know him by name.
He left with the two of you?
Yes, it was his choice. He wants to fight against Tenred, and so do I. But my father won't be welcomed back in Kiro.
He will be welcomed by us. But if Dessel admitted this, it might be obvious to Fathol that he'd been duped.
Bastial hell.
Fathol had been oddly silent since Dessel had answered the question. Mason should figure out what to do with his life after he comes here, Dessel said. We all understand why he took the Ackerel. We knew he would try, we just didn't think he would succeed. No, I'm glad he did, because you're safe.
What about the Wind Knights who were there with you?
None of them agree with his actions, but like I said, we all understand why he did it. We're angry at Fatal, not at your father.
I hope you won't let this anger lead to a foolish decision, Fatal warned. The Ackerel has already been hidden. If you come here to fight me, you will die for nothing.
Everything depends on what you plan to do with the Ackerel, Dessel countered.
I plan to keep it safe, so you could never use it to harm me or my elves.
We never would have.
Dessel's energy pulsed red, tinting the sky.
You've gotten involved in something that never would have affected you, and now hundreds, if not thousands, of humans are going to die because of it. Basin does not deserve any punishment for taking the Ackerel to you, but you deserve worse than either of the warring kings. You don't care how many humans die, even if it's by your own hand. You think that if we pose any threat at all, even a mere potential threat to your unborn children, then that threat must be eliminated at any cost to human life. You've shown that you're not going to stop until every race but elves are exterminated. We're nothing but pests to you. Yet the humans on this continent have never done anything against elves. Never. It's finally time we got angry. Only then will we realize who is the worst threat against our lives. It's you, Fatal. Give back the Ackerel, and we will have little to be angry about. If you truly wish to keep your elves safe, you will do that. Then you will stay the bastial hell away from us.
The only reason humans haven't attacked elves on this continent is because we've settled too far away. There is no threat on our unborn children yet. There is no threat on the grandchildren of those children or their grandchildren yet. But eventually humans will want something that we have, and there are many more humans than elves.
We already want something you have. Our Ackerel. Don't you see what you've done?
Yes. I'm keeping humans from building a weapon that could extinguish our entire race. It's worth however many humans must die to maintain control. I don't care if every one of you perish in this war. You will not build a weapon that powerful. It is too dangerous. And if I can't control it, I will destroy it before any of you have the chance to use it.
Dessel was so angry he couldn't think straight. It didn't matter to Fatal that this weapon could bring peace. It didn't even matter that no one had any intentions of using it against the elves.
I have nothing left to say to you, Dessel told Fathol. Lyda, bring Vithos and your father here. We will figure out what to do together.
It could be a long while. He can't be convinced to go back for a portal.
I'm not sure how much longer we can stay here with the war going on.
Lyda was silent.
The fatigue of staying in this plane is too much now, she finally commented.
Dessel was too angry to feel weary.
Let's speak again when one of us has an idea, she said.
All right.
Her presence was gone, leaving only Fathol.
Don't let that anger get you killed,
the elf cautioned.
I thought you didn't care how many of us die.
Fathol left without replying. The days passed slowly since Dessel had last spoken with Lyda. Without hope of hearing her voice, even if he'd never actually heard it in the other plane, the daylight seemed dull and weak, and the victories in the arena were practically meaningless. He fought against two Kreps at once, twice during each gathering at the arena, and there were two gatherings a day, so he fought a total of 8 Kreps a day. Training in between his matches was slow and extensive. There was more stomping and showing than actual fighting. He was glad for it when his time came to face the Kreps, but after a week of training, he was even more glad for his time against the Kreps in the arena. It was only during and after these real fights, with his adrenaline pumping, that he felt his skill increasing significantly. He'd be lost without his training, but it might have taken him a year to get to the same level as he'd done in a week because of the arena matches. He didn't know what it was about fighting in front of the crowd that made him feel as though he was truly fighting for his life, but all his senses were heightened only then. He was quicker in both mind and body, and somehow more powerful in both as well. Many times now he'd felt the urge to turn the entire arena to liquid, but he couldn't do so without scaring everyone. Dazzle tried to find this level of fierceness during his training, but it was just out of reach, like almost remembering a dream. Ironically, dreams were as clear and easy to remember as they'd ever been. Many were of him walking through a forest with Lyda, trying to get somewhere. He couldn't tell if this forest was in Caenuan or Meriek, or somewhere else entirely, but it always seemed to be the same place that he fell back into at least once a night. He awoke often with his mind always split between the planes. Sometimes he was panting and afraid of Fatal, though he couldn't tell why. Other times he was smiling, though it went away quickly as he realized that he was not actually at Lyda's side like his dream had made him believe. On the day Dazzle felt as though he was reaching his potential with sword-on-sword combat, he thought it might be fun to challenge Adria to a duel. It was not fun at all. He couldn't tell by the end of it if she was just that much better than he was, or if her staff gave her an advantage, so he asked her. "The staff does have an advantage," she confirmed. "Most people don't realize it because the weapon isn't sharp. This makes it even easier to beat them." Dazzle eventually understood the advantage of the staff after facing her enough times. There were too many instances when he tried to block her powerful overhead swing, only for his sword to be moved away and her staff hardly deflected. The end of her staff would then line up exactly with his face. She had been nice enough to tell him without showing that all she had to do was give it a quick thrust, and she could break his nose or slam his forehead hard enough to daze him for at least a breath. She told him that for battle she would use the staff with a pointed tip. He'd asked how many she'd killed, but he regretted it when a dark expression crossed her face and she looked away. "Too many. I don't count like some people do." Fortunately, she seemed herself again later. Dazzle asked why more people didn't train with other melee weapons besides swords. "Because both Kira and Tenrit's histories are filled with sword combat. It was the weapon of choice of our ancestors who first came here, and it's what each generation has been trained to use."
"So who taught you the staff?"
"My father. He knows many weapons because his father and uncle taught him, and Abith Max has instructed me since joining the academy." Dazzle had met the older man a few times. He had come here with the rest of the Wind Knights.
"Why did your father stay behind?"
"The same reason that everyone else did," Adria replied. "Some of them need to be ready to fight. The longer they can delay the battle, the better the chances we can use this weapon to prevent it."
"Isn't your father quite old to fight?"
Adria laughed. "He might be a little slower than he used to be, but he's still quicker than almost everyone else." Dazzle stumbled into bed. It wasn't the amount he'd drunk that made it difficult to get his thoughts in order. It was the pipe he'd smoked. He'd been pressured by Gregor to draw some into his lungs. Dazzle knew it was a mistake when the crept seemed alarmed at how much Dazzle had inhaled. The rest of the evening was a blur. Dazzle could barely recall why the Kreps were celebrating, but their entire colony partook in the festivities. Then he remembered. Today was the anniversary of when they'd settled here. They honored many of the older Kreps by crowning them with feathered headdresses and animal skin robes. Dazzle was on edge throughout the day, waiting for some of them to praise Fathal. Even a mention of an elf would cause him too much worry to relax. The elves had brought the Kreps here through a portal, even helped them build many of their homes, but Dazzle had spent much of the day with Adria and her mother, and Rila had heard nothing of elves or Fathal from the Kreps. He wondered how Adria was now. She'd taken just as big a puff from Garigor's pipe. What had they done during the day after? There were pieces of memories, dancing mostly. None of the Kreps had fought today. They beat their drums and plucked other instruments strange to Dazzle. He remembered one, some sort of string percussion instrument that a Krep had played on her lap. She'd slapped the strings between plucking and strumming. In Dazzle's memory, the songs composed by these Kreps were lively and fun, but who knew what they would have sounded like when he was sober? He wasn't the only one forced to celebrate with the Kreps. Every human was made to dance and at least join in a few rounds of drinking. The Kreps liked to show off how much they could put away.
Not even Kernich could handle much of the strong liquor that the Kreps passed around in mugs. Dessel laughed as he remembered playing that string percussion instrument, how he communicated with the Krep to take a turn he didn't recall, but he did remember Adria trying it after him. They'd competed throughout the day with all sorts of things, he thought he remembered. He laughed harder. They certainly had. It started with a dance competition between them, with Garrigor and his entourage of Kreps acting as the judges. Having no idea what kind of dancing these Kreps would like, Dessel and Adria tried to imitate what they'd seen from the creatures earlier. The Kreps liked to bounce, and not just a little. They enjoyed crouching all the way down, their rears sometimes even touching the ground, before popping up and throwing out their hands. They danced with the same speed as they fought, up and down, with their limbs flying in and out. There wasn't much swaying or even any movement of their hips, as was more common in the dancing Dessel noticed between Beatrix and Kernich. So he and Adria bounced and flailed in mimicry as best they could. Dessel watched Garrigor's reaction to tell what worked and what didn't. But there wasn't much to gauge from the large smiles upon the Kreps' long mouths. Eventually Dessel decided to take a risk and make the ground rubbery. He bounced high into the air and shot out every limb in rhythm. He couldn't stop laughing as he remembered their cheers. Adria had claimed later that he'd cheated. It was probably what had led to them competing with each other in every activity they could think of throughout the day. Dessel had surprised himself with the interesting sounds he'd made from slapping, strumming, and plucking the crepon-stringed instrument, but all his choices on how to play it were random and without skill. Adria really impressed him by first taking a moment to see how each string sounded, then choosing carefully how to slap, strum, and pluck. There might not have been a narrative to her song, but there was certainly rhythm. Given that Dessel's performance lacked both, she won the competition with ease. He thought he remembered her telling him later that she played the lute, but he couldn't be sure. If she had, he hoped he had called her a cheater because she was one. As he drifted into sleep, he realized that today was the first time since he'd spoken with Lyda that he was able to let go of his worry. He could feel it ready to crash back onto him now, a receding wave that gathered more and more power. There was nothing he could do, so he tried his best to fall asleep before it drowned him. He felt Lyda in the room with him sometime later. She was asking him questions that he was somehow responding to. This had to be a dream. He couldn't tell exactly what either of them were saying. Eventually, one of his own questions became clear in his ears. How did you get here so fast? You were in Merjik when we spoke 2 days ago. My father and I were able to make a portal, she replied. It's actually quite extraordinary. We didn't have any Akaral, but we were able to gather enough energy together for him to open one anyway. But aren't you curious how I found your room? This was just a dream, he reminded himself. So he didn't care about anything but getting up and kissing her. Bastial hell, he didn't have the strength to leave his bed. Perhaps I should come back later, Lyda said. No, don't go. Perhaps if he indulged her in conversation, she would stay long enough for him to get the strength to make it to her. How did you find me? Adria showed me where the Kreps have you living. She also told me there is good news, but that you deserve to be the one to tell me. What is it? Don't make me wait any longer. Dessel managed to sit up. This dream felt different than the others. Usually he had no control over his actions, and he and Lyda were always trying to get somewhere. He could feel her about to leave, though. The dream would end. He needed to kiss her before that happened, for he might never have a dream like this one again. He got to his feet. He couldn't see Lyda in the dark, so he reached out for her. Dessel, are you all right? She asked. She'd been crouching near his bed, he realized. He saw her stand. His hands found hers as she seemed to be reaching toward him. As soon as he touched her, his mind was clear. This was real. Bastial hell, Lyda, are you really here? She laughed. I already told you it's me. He stumbled backward out of shock, falling onto his bed. I thought I was dreaming. What? Until when? She sat down beside him and took his hands as she laughed. Until just now, he said. It really is you. You're really here. No wonder I didn't get the reaction I expected, she said between laughs. He wasn't sure what came over him, but there was no stopping it now. He kissed her with feverish passion.
He wanted to cry with joy, but he poured all of his emotions into his union with Lyda's lips. Arms and legs entwined, they fell onto his bed, and he rolled her beneath him. Dezzel had never felt such an urgent need to be joined with a woman. This wasn't just any woman. It was Lyda. Somehow Dezzel pulled back to ask one quick yet important question.
Is your father all right?
Yes. And with us as well.
Good.
He went straight back to her lips, unable to get enough of them. Of her. But eventually she gently nudged him off of her.
Dezzel, I have to know something. There were Krebs celebrating something when I arrived with my father just now. You might have already forgotten, but Adria said you have good news for me. I have a feeling what it might be, but I'm too scared to let myself believe it. I need to know, though.
How could I let you go this long without you hearing it? We still have the Acheron.
She sat up suddenly.
Are you sure?
Yes.
And this is not a joke?
No!
She screamed, a joyful sound, then laughed as she jumped off the lumpy mattress to hop up and down. She stopped only to grab Dezzel and pull him onto the dirt floor with her.
How? You have to tell me, Lyda demanded.
We attached a thin layer of acryl around blocks of silver. We knew your father would come for it, so we made it seem as though he was taking all of the acryl. It was the only way Futtle would believe it.
If you did give that much away, are you sure you still have enough?
We do, Lyda. We have enough acryl.
Are you sure? Are you absolutely sure?
Yes. We have everything we need. The apple is growing extremely quickly, and we're days away from completing the weapon. We still have to test it, but it should work.
So this is really going to happen?
Yes.
She threw her arms around him and fused her mouth to his. Their hands explored each other until their clothing became too much of a barrier. The speed at which they undressed each other came as a surprise to Dezzel, but it was the best one of his life. Finally, he was able to see what he'd only imagined for so long. The beauty of her spirit was equaled only by the loveliness of her body. Her piercing eyes looked deeply into his, and he recognized only love and understanding there. He felt incredibly aroused, but also self-conscious, when her eyes and lips traveled down to the physical evidence of his desire. But then she led him back to the bed, pulled him close, and whispered,
"I've missed you so much."
Dezzel nearly lost control, but forced himself to take it slow. He loved her with his hands and mouth before her moans of pleasure told him it was finally time. She gasped when he eased inside her, worrying him for a moment. But then she wrapped her legs around his back and began to move in rhythm with him. Dezzel surrendered to the overwhelming sensations surging through his body. On the verge of fulfillment, his last conscious thought was that he would do anything to keep Lyda safe and happy. Hours later, they'd pushed each other to their physical limit. Dezzel knew he should be exhausted, but he was too sated and happy to feel anything else. Whenever he thought of sleeping, Lyda's smile kept him awake.
"I don't want to close my eyes," he told her.
She smiled even as she kissed him. Her naked body was as musky with sweat as his, but it did nothing to cool his ardor. He couldn't bring himself to stop touching and kissing her.
"I hope my father found a place to sleep," she said.
"I'm sure he was welcomed everywhere."
"I wonder who told him the good news. Probably Rila."
Lyda sat up, not bothering to cover herself.
"She and Vithas cried when they saw each other. They didn't even need to speak. I'm sure she felt through Psyche that he'd be with her from now on. It was beautiful."
Dezzel had trouble appreciating any other form of beauty than what was in front of him. Lyda gave a flirty smile when she noticed him staring, but then she blushed and lay back beside him.
"Stop,"
she teased as she pulled the blanket over her head. She tickled his sides. He laughed and squirmed until he joined her under the cover and kissed her until they were both breathless. Eventually they rested their foreheads against each other's and Dezzel's eyes drifted closed. Sleep started to take him, until she spoke.
"Dezzel?"
"Hmm?"
"I don't know where I will be staying while we're with the Krebs."
"You don't?"
"No."
"I do,"
he said.
"I've already decided on a place for you."
"Oh, where?"
"Right here. Every night."
She put a hand on his cheek.
"But your bed is quite small."
"That makes it even better."
She nuzzled his neck and kissed his ear before whispering,
"There's nowhere else I'd rather be."
Chapter 32.
Dazzle was surprised when he awoke, late in the morning, and realized no one had come to rouse him. Lyda was still asleep. Unfortunately, there was no way to get out of bed without disturbing her, as she was partially draped over him. He gave her one last long look, glad for the light. Bastial hell, she was gorgeous. Then he started to sit up.
"Sorry to wake you," he said as she opened her eyes. "I should start training soon, but you can stay here to rest longer."
She stretched and groaned, seemingly unabashed by her nakedness. Lyda always had a way of making him more comfortable, with even the most difficult or frightening tasks, like getting dressed in front of another person.
"I need to get up as well," she said.
They took their time dressing. Lyda didn't seem to mind that Dazzle enjoyed watching her put each piece of clothing on her beautiful body. She smiled over her shoulder at him, stopping to watch him as well. They walked into each other's arms when they were done and shared a hug.
"I feel like I owe you my life," she said.
"I hope that's not why you..."
"Of course not. I would never do that out of guilt or even gratitude," she kissed him. "But I have to find some other way to make it up to you."
"There's nothing you or anyone can give me that will make me happier than I am now."
She beamed.
"Besides," Dazzle said, "I don't feel as though I've really done anything. Every day I wished I could do more to get you out of that prison. There was one night I almost left, but Beatrix and Kernich stopped me."
"I figured you might have tried. Was it when I told you I'd lost hope to live?"
"Yes."
Sadness swelled in his chest as he remembered her words.
"I'm fine now. Everything's going to be."
"It finally feels that way to me as well."
Kernich and Beatrix had saved them breakfast. They ate their meals side by side on a log outside their temporary home. Dazzle enjoyed her quiet company. His smile wouldn't leave his face, even if he tried. When Adria headed over, Lyda nearly dropped her bowl in her eagerness to hug her friend.
"You don't know how happy I am that you're here," Adria said. "I do know, because I feel the same. It must have been difficult not to tell me the good news. Hardest thing I've done in a while, but Dazzle deserved it more."
She looked between the two of them before focusing back on Lyda.
"Did you sleep here tonight?"
"I did."
It was awkward for a moment as Dazzle waited for Adria to say something else. Her smile widened until she broke out with a laugh.
"All right, good. Very good."
Then she sat beside Dazzle and, thankfully, changed the subject.
"That was surprisingly fun yesterday. I can't remember who won. Come sit, Lyda. Relax. You look tired."
She snickered when Lyda elbowed her. Dazzle had forgotten about the Crepan ceremony. It felt like months ago.
"I can't recall either."
If he was honest, he would tell Adria that nothing seemed to matter any more besides Lyda. He could still feel her lips on his every time he glanced her way.
"I didn't come here to relax," Lyda said as she sat beside Adria. "I want to do. My father and I should be put to work."
She gasped, as if remembering something.
"But there's so much we have to talk about." "I know."
Adria's sudden excitement matched Lyda's.
"How is Eckard?"
"Completely changed," Adria revealed. "I actually miss him."
Eckard was the young man Dazzle saw briefly in the forest outside Tenred's wall. He was the same person who'd spied on them before Dazzle and the others had left for Caenuan, and who'd then reported on their plan to Beatrix and Kernich, who hadn't yet joined forces with Dazzle's group. He realized a worried Eckard had done so because he still cared about Adria, despite the unpleasant end to their romance. By the way she spoke of him now, it was clear they'd rekindled their affection.
"I should start training," Dazzle said. "I'll let the two of you catch up."
He'd had all night with Lyda. It was only fair. It was hard to part with her, even considering that, though. She took his hand as he started to stand, and he leaned over and kissed her soft cheek. As he strode off to his usual training area, a voice called from behind,
"Dazzle, wait!"
He turned around to see Basin stepping over the log where Dazzle had been sitting. Basin stopped to greet Adria, who stood to hug him.
"I think we should speak,"
Basin then told Dazzle. He nodded. They walked together toward where the apple was growing out of the ground. Nothing else in nature grew as quickly. Thick ropes of it had already sprouted and coiled around itself. The soil was black beneath it.
"I apologize for what I did,"
Basin said.
"You shouldn't. You did exactly what we hoped you would."
He smiled.
"Rila told me. She also said you came up with the idea before she and the other Wind Knights arrived. She explained how they melted down the steel swords instead of offering them to the Creps as gifts, because
Thanks to you, Beatrix and Kernich, the Wind Knights were already honored enough to be permitted in. As you know, they melted the Ackerel as well and attached it to silver to make the blocks that I took to Fattle. It was a good idea with little risk. You didn't deserve to be choked and tied to a chair. You didn't deserve to suffer even for a second. You've been loyal since we first met. It seems to me that it was more than good fortune running into you at the lake.
Thaysen paused as if he didn't know what else to say.
I suppose what I'm trying to tell you is thank you. Thank you, Dazzle. But I also need to know why you have done so much.
I wanted to be involved in making a better world before I met you, but I promised my mother I wasn't going to join the Academy.
It sounds like you already knew you were exceptional.
The wording made him feel arrogant, but he didn't know of a better way to say it. I'm embarrassed to admit it.
Don't be, Mason nearly shouted. Imagine if everyone like us did nothing. Many of us would lead average lives. Well, some of us would be happier that way.
He laughed.
But that's not how anything changes. It's not how anything gets better.
Dazzle nodded.
I think you and Lyda might know me better than my mother in this aspect.
I only know a few sides of you, but I do know Effie. She does realize what and who you are. She's tried to protect you by keeping you in Kaevol, but she would never force you into that life. I'm sure she knew eventually that you would be involved in something like this. Have this conversation with her when this is over. I think you might be surprised.
Dazzle realized this must be one reason everyone trusted Basin Hiller to lead. He always seemed to know what he was talking about, no matter the subject. It would be wrong not to listen to such a man, especially one with similar thoughts as Dazzle.
I'm very glad you're back, he told Basin.
But not as much as you are that my daughter's back, eh?
He gave Dazzle a light elbow as Dazzle turned red. Basin laughed.
If you were any other man, I might give you a warning at the very least.
He shook his head.
But I know you would never hurt her. I'm going to cut this topic short because I need you to do something.
Dazzle followed Basin's gaze to the apple.
With that? Yes.
Dazzle frowned for the first time that morning. Basin took Dazzle out of the Crepan encampment, bringing Beatrix and Kernich for protection. No one anticipated Alaphon's troops would be watching the outskirts of the Crepan encampment. It was too large for only a few scouts to observe, and Alaphon didn't have more men to spare than that. But there was a worse threat than Beatrix's brother, and that was Fathol. The four of them had spoken of nothing else besides Fathol during the walk into the dense forest. It was unlikely for the elven leader to be here himself, but there was no telling what he would do if he suspected something was wrong with the Ackerel Basin had delivered to him. Enough days had passed for the metal to be at full glow. Even a small amount of Ackerel could absorb enough bastial energy to be too bright to look at, so there was a good chance Fathol would never know that the thin squares were mostly silver. Not until he built his own weapon and tried to cause an explosion would the truth become clear. It should be too late by then. Dazzle's comrades had almost built the catapult they would need to launch the apple between short towers of Ackerel. Everything was looking good, at least from what Dazzle had heard. He'd had nothing to do with the weapon's construction. He hadn't even seen the Ackerel.
How bright is it?
He asked Basin when the conversation led to the invaluable metal.
Brighter than any of the Ackerel we've seen so far. Blinding.
I don't remember it being that bright on the Maros Mountains in Caenwyn, Beatrix said.
Our blocks of Ackerel are thicker, most likely. They can hold more bastial energy.
Besides a few hugs and warm phrases like, glad you're safe, there had been nothing else said or done for Beatrix and Kernich to show how happy they were that Basin was here, leading them again. But even without that, Dazzle could tell the truth by the looks they gave him. They'd already had hope before Basin arrived, but now that he was here, they had something they'd been lacking without Dazzle realizing it. Certainty. It was difficult for Dazzle to force himself to look for scouts, as he felt that nothing short of an army of elves could stop them now. Earlier, Basin had bent over the apple growing out of the ground, holding his breath, and pulled out a knife. He'd told Dazzle that he'd wanted Stefan to cut it off, so he wouldn't have to. But the chemist was busy teaching the Kreps aspects of medicinal treatment that he was horrified to learn the creatures lacked.
He said I could cut it anywhere, Basin had told Dazzle before slicing off a vine, and it would continue to grow.
A black juice had spilled out over the already darkened ground. The toxic odor was suffocating, though it only lasted a breath. Dazzle expected the ground to sizzle as it soaked up the thick liquid, but whatever damage it caused was unseen and unheard. Basin had put the long vine in a large bag that he now carried with an extended arm. He held a grimace throughout the walk.
"We've gone far enough,"
he said as he dumped out the apple. It never ceased to amaze Dazzle how black it was. Light didn't seem to reach it, as if it was nothing but a hole.
"Have you figured out what I need from you yet, Dazzle?"
"I have no idea."
"This is going to be difficult for me to say, but it's important that we discuss it. The last time your father was with us..."
Dazzle didn't hear the rest of Basin's words as he relived the memory of the explosion enveloping his father. Fortunately, he didn't need to hear Basin to know what he meant for Dazzle to do now.
"I don't have that ability," he told Basin.
"Have you tried?"
"No."
"Then you can't be sure."
Basin aimed his palm at the limp vine.
"Let's start practicing."
It began to glow as the Master Mage fed it bastial energy. Dazzle instinctively stepped back, Beatrix and Kernish doing the same.
"It won't explode," Basin assured them. "It needs far more energy than I'm going to feed it. Come closer, Dazzle. We didn't suffer through everything to get this far just for me to accidentally kill us all now."
"Except I don't believe in destiny,"
Kernish argued.
"An accident is an accident, no matter how undeserved."
"Then you stay back and watch for elves, while those who do believe in fate take the necessary chance."
Basin shifted his gaze to Dazzle, who still refused to come closer.
"Just come here," Basin said flatly. "How do you know enough about Apple to be sure it won't explode? Because of Stefan, who I've trusted with my life before."
Beatrix said, "The same chemist who didn't inform us we should wear gloves when pouring the acryl melting substance?"
"Yes, him. Come on, Dazzle, tell me what you feel."
"Nothing," Dazzle said as he stepped toward the glowing vine. It was no longer black, but green.
"You feel bastial energy?"
"No."
"And that's my point. Look at the light it's making. Green. You know what colours make green?"
"Blue and yellow," Dazzle said. "But I don't get what that means."
"What colour is the light made from bastial burning sarcious energy?"
"Yellow, I suppose."
"Yellow, yes. But the apple vine is taking bastial energy and making green light. The bastial energy is burning something in the apple vine to make yellow light, possibly sarcious energy. But there's also something happening we know less about, something that makes blue light."
"How do you know it's making two separate colours and not green on its own?" Beatrix asked. She'd moved closer while Kernish stayed back.
"Through extensive testing using crystals and water in a dark room, all of which I'm lacking now to show you. You're just going to have to trust that I'm sure. It's two colours, and blue is the mystery. What makes blue light? Nothing we know of so far. I wouldn't have thought much of it, except we all saw what Wade did. He stopped that cluster of apple from exploding. I believe he connected to a different form of energy, one made by the apple when it soaks in bastial energy and produces blue light."
Dazzle hadn't forgotten what his father had done. The memory was too painful to remember, but that didn't mean it was gone. He now could recall his father's absolute control over the glowing apple. The energy went from blindingly bright to no glow at all, at Wade's command. Dazzle crouched over the apple, still finding that it made him feel sick, even with Basin feeding it bastial energy. Dazzle extended a shaky hand and closed his eyes. Without meaning to, his mind went to the other plane. Dazzle glimpsed the glowing apple in that world, for it was the best way he knew how to understand something new. Most everything here had a multitude of colours, but not the apple. It was black and blue like an ugly bruise, a gaping hole that sucked in vapours from the energy in its vicinity. Dazzle put his mind into it, but immediately pulled back, as he felt he might fall into somewhere he couldn't escape from. He moved his mind toward it again, hesitantly this time. He felt power without life, as if approaching the base of a waterfall. The sizzling sound that was usually subdued and unnoticed about this place quickly grew to be deafening. Just as Dazzle had the sensation that he was going to fall, he felt something. Teetering, he couldn't find his balance. He was suddenly wrestling with a force that he deeply understood. It knew nothing but bastial energy, and that's all it wanted. It stole the life out of everything, a leech of the world. But what did it do if it was fed this energy it so hungered for? Dazzle almost lost control as the battle dragged on, trying to remain close to understand the apple without being sucked into it. He got too close and felt himself being pulled under. He put everything he had into breaking away. He couldn't get far enough. He was losing, being dragged ever closer to something that felt even worse than death. He had no idea what it was, but he couldn't let it take him. His mind finally fell out of the plane, slamming into his body as he rolled backward. Everything was spinning as different voices asked him if he was all right. Their worried faces came into focus. He smiled as he realized something.
"I felt it."
"What?"
Basin asked.
"The explosive potential. It wanted to use me. Now I just have to figure out how to use it."
"Then let's go again," Basin said,
as he pulled Dazzle up. Chapter 33. The days were long, but Dazzle's nights were wonderfully longer. By the third night after Lyda had arrived at the Crepan colony, they were both so exhausted from the previous sleepless nights that they did nothing more than fall asleep in each other's arms. It was a good thing, for they needed to be fresh for the next day. The weapon was ready to be tested. As per Basin's instructions, Dazzle had foregone sword training in the last couple of days to learn the mysteries of the apple plant instead. By now, he was able to control trace amounts of explosive energy as Basin fed Bastille to the vine. But there was no telling how well Dazzle could control the immense energy of a cluster of apple that was about to explode. He would find out today. Each day there had been two events in the arena, but not today. All of the Wind Knights had to accompany those testing the weapon in case elves or humans attacked, but even that was not enough for anyone to feel secure about taking the catapult out of the Crepan encampment. Fortunately, many Creps had proven themselves willing and able to fight by winning matches against Kernich, Dazzle, and even a few against Beatrix. Three, to be exact, had withstood her psyche. Unfortunately, none of the Creps were able to beat the human teams of two. Dazzle still wasn't good enough to represent the best of the humans in team combat, so he'd watched from the side as Adria and her instructor, Abith, routinely defeated Crepan duos. Even Garrigor, who had proved he could easily defeat Kernich, couldn't win a point with his chosen partner against Adria and Abith. The teacher and his student knew each other too well, always there to protect the other's back when it seemed that a Crep might sneak in and attack. Dazzle had figured it was because of their extensive time sparring together, but that didn't seem to be the only reason. Adria also fought with Kernich against Creps, and even the two of them worked extremely well together. It must have been the training they'd received at the academy. Not only was it time to test the weapon, it was time to create Bastille steel for these victorious Creps. They were the best of their kind. If they could just learn to fight together as well as they did alone, then their loyalty would be worth more than any weapon the Wind Knights gave away. It was still unclear to Dazzle and everyone else who their enemies would be, but one thing seemed obvious. Someone would be standing in their way, whether it was the army of Kiro, the army of Tenred, or an army of elves. The only enemies that seemed unlikely to ever meet them in combat again were the Marrows. There had been no sightings of the enormous birds since Dazzle had returned to Kiro in a portal. It took nearly an entire day to walk north, to the edge of Kilmar, where there was enough land without trees for the weapon to be properly tested. They had to ensure that, after flinging the apple cluster between the walls of Akeril, it did not strike a tree, or it might kill them all. The open land would also give them a better view of the explosion, to ensure it had enough power to destroy a castle or Tenred's wall. Otherwise they wouldn't be able to plausibly threaten either king. Nico, the Pyphorial mage, stayed close to the catapult throughout the long trek. Apparently he had been in command of the construction, for he knew the most about architecture. It was disconcerting that he appeared the most nervous out of anyone as he investigated different parts of the catapult, even moments before they arrived in Kilmar. This land was mostly barren, besides a ring of mountains that nearly surrounded a desert. The Wind Knights set up the catapult so that these mountains were their target. They needed something to shoot at. Dazzle wasn't the only one excited to see such tremendous power, though he didn't know why he felt this way. The explosion would be dangerous. Bastille, hell, one had even killed his father. And yet he wouldn't miss the sight of this no matter what. Even Rikik was here. Everyone, including his son, had tried to convince him to stay in the Crepan encampment where he would be safe from attacking elves, humans, or from an accident involving the weapon. But he wanted to witness the explosion. Dazzle didn't blame him. Hundreds of Creps had wanted to come, but only those who'd proved their honour in the arena were allowed, a decision made by Rikik, aided by Rila's advice. It would clearly result in more Creps wishing to improve their swordsmanship so they could join the humans in the future. The apple had been taken by horse and wagon, the animals controlled with psyche. The way the apple was carried was not too different from how Rikik rode in a wagon pulled by horses. It was a comical sight, the deadly plant transported the same way as the Crepan leader. Dessel recognized his old horse as one of the two animals pulling Rikik's wagon along. He asked Beatrix if the animal recognized him and was pleased to find out that the horse did. But that was the extent of the horse's affection. Dessel had never felt too close to him before, so he didn't mind parting with the animal. He just hoped his mother had come across a good deal on a young one as a replacement. Dessel realized later that the better question for Beatrix was whether the animal was happy, which he'd asked. "As happy as horses tend to be," she'd said. None of the humans had seen Kreps mistreating animals, so this didn't come as a surprise to Dessel. The creatures may be savages in some aspects, but they were not usually cruel. Nico demanded to be the one who launched the apple from the catapult. There had been some bickering between him and Rila about him being too valuable to lose if something went wrong. But Nico wasn't about to let anyone else, not even a crap, take the risk. Everyone moved away from him when he put the apple in place, except for Dessel. He wanted to be close enough to ensure he was within the boundaries of manipulating this volatile energy. If he could prevent the apple from exploding, he would. It would be of no benefit to anyone today, but all of them might benefit later if Dessel knew he had the power to stop the explosion like his father had. Well, Wade only seemed capable of delaying the explosion. Perhaps the same would be said of Dessel when he reached his potential. It was often during his training that he wondered how his father had realized he had control over this explosive energy. Wade tended to practice anything and everything he could, like Dessel. If Wade had any ability or talent, he experimented with it until he knew whether he could excel or if he was destined to be average at best. He had probably felt the energy by accident among some apple vines in Canewyn. Dessel had imagined his father experimenting for hours afterward, just as Dessel had. "It's beyond experimenting," he thought. Dessel now had control.
"Are you ready?" Nico asked him.
"Yes."
The catapult itself was as tall as a Dyrrhic, but the symmetrical towers of Akeril jutted past the top of the weapon by about the height of Kernich. Nico started to count down with his hand on the lever of the catapult.
3, 2, 1,
he pulled the lever. The arm launched the dense cluster of apple between the Akeril. It passed by too quickly for Dessel to see what had happened. All he noticed was that the Akeril instantly lost all of its light, and now the apple was blinding. Dessel was in the other plane as the plant flew away from him almost too quickly. There was a moment, however, when he took control over it, just as he had during practice in the last few days. He squelched its power with his own, forcing it to relent its thirst for energy. Something was different this time, though. The apple didn't search for bastial energy to absorb. It needed to expel its own. Dessel could feel it about to burst. He tried to suppress it and was amazed at his own power. It didn't quite lose its need to expel, but it did calm. But then the moment was over, the apple too far for him to reach with his mind. He returned to the physical plane and saw the apple with a dim glow. It became so bright again that it seemed to be burning, yet there was no flame. Everyone shielded their eyes. Soon it started to arc downward. Basin said,
"You did it! I saw!"
"Yes, but I don't know how long I can control it," Dessel replied. "I won't know unless it remains near me in that state, like it did with my father."
"Hopefully we won't have to test that, but at least now we know that you have some control over it."
They fell silent as the impact became imminent. It fell short of the mountains, still a bit too close to everyone for Dessel's comfort. The explosion began with a flash of light brighter than any bolt of lightning. Everything went white so that it was impossible to see anything else. When the flash faded, a green ball of fire rose up from the ground. Dessel didn't catch much else in the moment that followed, as a wave of power rushed along the ground and threw everyone off their feet. The sound was deafening, like 1,000 fireballs crashing into each other. The power of the explosion rivaled that which the Marrows had produced, the one that incinerated Dessel's father and destroyed much of the Marrows Mountains. When Dessel was able to look at the explosion again, the green fire was already fading behind an enormous cloud of rising dust. But the destruction had only begun. Chunks of earth as large as crepes rained down. Bastial steel was among them, bright and beautiful. Some of the crepes started toward it, but Rikik rightly yelled at them to stay put. It was a death trap. Everyone seemed to pick up on one large rock spinning as it soared toward them. They pointed and backed away. There were a couple screams as it landed 30 yards ahead and broke through the ground. Everyone watched and waited in silence as the final pieces of smoking earth and freshly formed bastille steel rained down.
"They might have heard that in Tenred if they didn't see it," Dezel heard Basin tell Rila.
"What do you suggest we do?" she asked.
"Let's get the weapon back to the encampment quicker than it took us to get here," Basin suggested. "We'll have to send out scouts to watch for troops coming from the west. The weapon will be safe so long as we can get it back into the encampment before they arrive."
"And if they come for it after we've gotten it back?" Rila asked.
"We won't be able to use the weapon against them even if we wanted to. Having only fired it once, we don't have the accuracy we need to strike down a force of soldiers without destroying any creps. Hawthorne shouldn't be a problem, though. The creps will keep his army out."
Hawthorne's army hadn't been a fear to Dezel until he heard the two leaders discussing it. Now he wondered why they hadn't gone even farther to test the weapon. Looking at the hole left by the explosion, he had his answer. No one had expected this much power. While the creps gathered the bastille steel, Dezel went with Lyda and Adria to investigate the crater. They couldn't see the bottom of it without getting close, but the ground near the rim was loose, cracked in many places, too precarious to risk standing upon. They could see the far side, however. It went down at least 20 yards before the hole was too deep to see the bottom.
"Is that bastille steel in the wall?" Lyda asked, pointing to what Dezel thought was something glistening.
Adria pulled a spyglass out of her bag and looked through it.
"Yes. I fear the creps might get themselves killed trying to get it out. Perhaps it's best if we don't tell them."
She passed the spyglass to Lyda.
"I see what you mean."
She gave it to Dezel. The bastille steel seemed to be shaped like a thick vein. It travelled up and down the side of the dirt and eventually came to rest in a jagged, protruding chunk half sticking out. The chunk was big enough to make at least one sword, which would be worth more than Dezel's mother could make in a year.
"There's probably more bastille steel in there that we can't see," Dezel said as he gave Adria her spyglass back. "Perhaps Nico could fly down safely."
"You're right," Lyda said as she took Dezel's hand. "I'll tell my father. He'll know what's best."
The three of them returned to their group. All of the creps were still out searching for the scattered bastille steel. Many of the chunks were tiny, but even they were valuable.
"It's going to take them more than the daylight we have left," Basin was telling Rila. "Tell Avrikik that some of us will stay here to collect the Akaral. The rest need to bring the weapon back to where it's safe as soon as possible."
"Who stays?" Rila asked.
"That's up to you."
"There seems to be a lot more bastille steel in the crater," Lyda told them.
"Is it safe to collect?"
Basin asked his daughter.
"No, but Dezel was thinking Nico might be able to get to it without fear of falling."
"All right, he and I will have a look. Then most of us are leaving."
"I'll talk to Rikik," Rila said.
Basin ran over to Nico. Would Hawthorne's army coming for them really be that much of a threat? Basin would have the weapon back in the Crepan encampment in a day. Meanwhile, it would take at least 2 days for even a fast-travelling army to get there from Tenred or the Fjallion Mountains. Perhaps they weren't as safe in the Crepan encampment as Dezel figured, and Basin had some preparations to do. Adria stared at the crater from afar.
"That explosion was much more powerful than the one in Caenwyn. Are you sure?" Lyda asked. "Yes, if that explosion had been like this one, we wouldn't be here. So that should be good," Lyda prodded, for Adria's tone was foreboding. "It should be. Yet I can't help but think that this amount of power is wrong." "It's in the right hands," Lyda said.
She put up her palms.
"Don't say it."
But Dezel could feel Adria thinking it, just as he did.
For now.
Chapter 34. There was jealousy among the creps. All of them wanted bastille steel swords, but the precious metal was to be melted down only for the creps who'd come out victorious in the arena. Fortunately, there was enough bastille steel to make a sword for all of those creps, but this left some of the humans wishing for Nico and the small team of creatures to return soon. They had stayed behind to fetch what bastille steel they could from the crater. Nebre was among them, for translation, which meant that Rila was the only one in the colony who Dezel knew of, who was fluent in both languages. Then again, he had heard something about a crep named Zok, who supposedly could speak common tongue. But the last time Dezel had heard his name was long ago,
when Basin had transported Dazzle and others into this colony without Crepan permission, so he could get to Tenred quickly to fetch the Acheral melting substance. Basin had said they needed to find Nebri or Zoke, friends of his, for translation and safe passage through the colony. Oddly, Dazzle had heard nothing about Zoke since then. He missed being involved in all the decisions, but it was still a relief, nonetheless. He trained with Kernich and Adria. Lyda accompanied her father elsewhere as he attended to business. There had been no declaration or unanimous decision for him to lead again. Everyone naturally turned to him, and Basin took on the responsibility as if he'd had no other choice. Dazzle trusted him and happily focused on training instead. Dazzle waited up for Lyda that night. It had been a full day since they'd returned with their weapon, and he hadn't seen her. He was just starting to fall asleep when he heard her come in. She got beneath the covers and cuddled against him. Her skin was cold as he put his arm across her and warmed her with his body. "I have some bad news," she began. "Kreps saw an elf last night."
"Where?"
"I don't know. It was somewhere in the colony humans don't usually go. He probably made a portal into the arena during the night, then looked around the colony for the Acheral. Kreps didn't see him until he made a portal to leave in the arena that same night."
"Could he have seen the weapon?"
"That's what my father and Rila have been trying to figure out today. It doesn't seem like it, but this still makes it clear that Fathol is suspicious."
Dazzle asked, "Has he reached out to you?"
"No, you?"
"No. He's probably waiting until he knows something."
They lay still for a moment.
"The portal mage could have brought another elf with him who's still here," Dazzle realized.
"My father said the same thing. Rikik has already begun spreading the word for his Kreps to search for one or more elves hiding or spying. It seems unlikely that they might see our weapon without anyone catching them, but it's not easy to hide a catapult. There could be elves on the hills around this colony. With spyglasses and the right angle, they might catch sight of it. My father has been trying to convince Rikik to send Kreps out to look for these elves, but apparently this is too much for him to ask. No Krep wants to leave the colony for a human matter. There seems to be honour in staying here."
"I suppose that means the Kreps aren't as loyal to us as I thought.
These gifts of bastial steel swords are dividing the Kreps into those who are with us and those who are not," Lyda said. "We have to be careful that it never becomes dishonourable to fight with us."
"It sounds like we have to prove ourselves to the colony again."
"We would if we could, but there are no more opportunities to do that, and there isn't much time anyway."
Dazzle sat up as he realized what she was saying. "We're leaving soon?"
"Yes, the weapon is ready. So are we. We just have to wait for more apples so we have enough for more clusters. 2 days and we can leave."
"What's the plan?"
She sighed and burrowed even closer to him, laying her hand over his heart in a gesture that had come to mean so much to both of them. "It's complicated, but it's safe," Lyda assured. "We have to move the weapon through Corrin Forest and get it close enough to threaten Tenred's wall."
"That could be impossible if an army is in our way."
"The threat of the weapon can be used to force them to move."
"I suppose it can be used for anything we want now," Dazzle realized. It was strange to harness this much power. "But it's not a threat if we don't actually mean to use it."
"That's the most difficult part about this. We might have to."
"And that's why we're going to Tenred first?"
"It's not the only reason," Lyda said. "Many of the troops on Kiro's side are ready for this weapon to end the war. Their loyalty is with our territory, so they fight to defend it, but that's only because there is no other option. They will gladly lay down their weapons if it means they won't face defeat. We aren't sure it's the same with Hawthorne's troops."
"So they must be threatened first. But what do we expect them to do when we're near their wall with the catapult?"
"Remove themselves from the Fjallion Mountains, so they are no longer an immediate threat to Kiro. Once they return to Tenred, the two kings will meet to discuss terms of peace."
"I feel that I already know the answer to this, but I have to ask. What if they don't agree, even if we threaten their territories?"
"We will have to use the weapon."
After a moment of silence, Dazzle said, "It feels like we're doing this for Kiro, not for everyone."
"It does, but there's no other way."
"What's going to happen to Alaphon and Jimin afterward?"
"They will stand trial for murder. There are more than just the Wind Knights who are waiting to hear the truth about the late king's death. Everyone who has ever fought is tired of assassinations and other types of injustices that often lead to war, and many of Kiro's troops are currently in prison for refusing to follow orders. The Wind Knights will make sure they are released when the trial is over. Peace will be supported by all, at least in this territory."
"And who is to be king?"
"I don't know.
My father says that will be decided later, and not by him.
Dessel asked, did he say who would decide it?
The Wind Knights. They have the support of the people. When they choose someone to lead, everyone should follow, without rebellion.
It seemed like many, many things could go wrong. They would have to deal with whatever happened when it happened, as there seemed to be no way to prepare for all possible outcomes. But his mind cleared of these thoughts when Lyda's hand roamed down his body as she feasted on his mouth. It was easy to keep up his training with the threat of battle always driving him to improve. Dessel was talented with the sword, as he always knew he was, but his level of skill would never match Adria's or Kernich's. Unlike the two of them, he could never react quickly enough to defeat so many opponents of varying strategy and skill. It was too easy for him to make a mistake with one of his attacks or to fail to block correctly every time, as was needed to avoid being struck. Fortunately for Dessel, he had his Mylan. There seemed to be no limit to this power like there was with his swordsmanship. There were small, mountainous hills on the outskirts of the Crepan encampment. Dessel remembered them from the last time he'd come here in Basin's portal. He decided he would take some time away from his sword training to visit them and test exactly what he was capable of. There wasn't much time left for him to try, so it needed to be now. He didn't know what he was going to do exactly, but he knew it would be dangerous. The day was warm enough for him to swim through the lake rather than walk around it, but he didn't. There was no way to know if the many creps coming and going to collect the water would approve of a human swimming in their lake, so Dessel took the long route around it to get to the hills. They were as rocky as they'd seemed from across the lake. Rock had always been the most difficult to manipulate. He wasn't sure exactly where he should stand. He needed to know how he might have to manipulate the Fjallion Mountains, either from above or below, but there was no way to know that now. Hopefully that skill wouldn't be needed at all, but Dessel had a bad feeling that it would. The hills were gradual enough for Dessel to walk up to their highest point without needing to climb. He missed climbing, though, just as he missed a good swim. The thought brought back memories of his home. He remembered feeling strong and capable then, but it didn't compare to who he was now. Before he began, he watched as a younger crep headed around the lake as if following him. The crep looked up at him and shouted,
"Desert hog!"
Confused, Dessel could only reply with, "What?" The crep seemed to be happy to walk up the same hills after Dessel, a smile turning up his long mouth. He spoke in Crepan to Dessel.
"Dranul Ruiskat!"
"Why are you here?" Dessel didn't know how to tell the crep that he was here to practice, nor did he know how to say it would be dangerous. The young crep would be about Dessel's height if he straightened his neck. Instead, he stretched it forward to survey the land around them, as if trying to figure out the mystery for himself.
"I should have had Rila teach me how to explain to creps that I don't know how to tell them something."
Dessel used his limited vocabulary as best he could.
"Rilu iskat wakwan."
"I am here to move." He bent down to touch the ground.
"Akwan,"
he repeated, then made a rumbling sound from his throat as best he could, while shaking his hands.
"Dra?"
the crep asked.
"Why?"
Dessel couldn't tell him that it was for practice. He didn't even know how to ask the crep to go away. A gesture might anger the creature, so what else could Dessel do but begin and hope the crep would realize that he should leave? Perhaps this added distraction was good. Dessel would most likely have to manipulate the mountain under worse circumstances. He connected his mind to the stone that made up most of these hills. He thought of them as small mountains composed of layers. He had no hope of softening every layer at the same time, but he could connect his mind to one easily. Now he just needed to reach the potential of his power, as he had in the arena after battling creps. It forced him to put himself in a state of fear, as if anticipating danger. His pulse increased as his senses heightened. The little mountain they stood upon began to tremble. The crep shouted something in his language, nearly breaking Dessel's focus. Dessel held onto the mountain with his mind. He'd only used half his strength as parts he'd chosen to manipulate sank into the softened layer below. He stopped as the crep shouted and grabbed his arm. Dessel was surprised to see the crep smiling. He said something about being strong that Dessel didn't understand. He'd already known he could cause the land beneath him to collapse, all of it. That wasn't much help. The real reason for coming here was to see if he could destroy another hill while standing on this one. The slabs of rock that made up these hills were mostly connected, varying in height. Dazzle set his gaze on a patch of lumpy stone breaking out through the grass 10 yards from him. The difficulty of connecting with it from this distance was like trying to hold up his sword with his arm fully extended. It exhausted his mind quickly as he began, but his power was immense. The lumps of rock sank, evening out. There was a grinding noise as loud as a flock of marrows shrieking as the stone crumbled apart.